Hello, New York Rangers fans, and welcome to the comeback episode of the New Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, a.k.a. Papa V, and we are back. It's been a few weeks since I talked to you guys last. If some of you might remember, the way that I signed off on the previous episode was saying, you know, I expected to be back the following week, but if I wasn't, that meant that we were having a baby. And lo and behold, within a matter of 5-6 days after that episode was recorded, my son, Vincent Jr., arrived ahead of schedule. I can tell you it came as quite a surprise. We were about 2 weeks away from the due date. I didn't book a guest this week because I figured we have a lot to catch up on. I just actually, before we recorded this, got peed on for the second time today, and never did I think I would be so happy to say that. It's been a blur of 3-4 weeks now since the baby came, a little over 3 weeks to be exact. But at the same time, it's been one of these things that, like, you will never forget every day, every moment. It's hard to even describe. It's joyous. It's stressful. It's tiring for sure. My sleep patterns are way different than they were a month ago. It's surreal in so, so many ways. And it is truly, truly a beautiful thing that I think it's difficult to put into words until you've actually experienced it. Leading up to it, of course, you have all these different people giving you advice, and probably the best advice I got in the process was, you got to figure this out on your own. You know, all the advice that you might hear, it's one of those things that until you do it yourself, it's hard to tell somebody exactly what to expect. And I have definitely found that to be the case. It really, the way that it unfolded was like, you know, I guess in some ways it was fitting because it was Monday, April 5th. Some of you guys might remember that day because it was the day when Kaapo Kakko, who had been skating on the second line with Artemi Panarin and Ryan Strome, got dropped down and David Quinn made the move to push Colin Blackwell up to the second line. So I had done the Zoom press conference with David Quinn. I was in the process of writing my story for the day and having lunch with my fiance. We were having leftover ravioli. Of course, you know, we like to eat well around here. And one thing led to another, a couple questions came up, we're on the phone with the doctor. Long story short is that we weren't sure, but we thought maybe her water was breaking. So I, of course, jump up. We had our bag packed and ready to go for the hospital. I was ready to go. Okay, what do we need to do? I'm dropping the story. I'm dropping everything I'm doing. Let's get in the car. My fiance, though, on the other hand, and this, as I wrote in my column the other day, filled me with pride, was like, you know what? I'm still a little hungry. These raviolis are really good. Can I get one more plate before we go? So that just shows you how calm, cool, and collected she was in this situation. It was kind of like Adam Fox entering the offensive zone. She knew that she had a game plan and she executed it. And that was definitely important because most mothers will tell you that once you get to the hospital, when you go into labor, it's probably going to be a while before you get to eat again. So she was definitely grateful later on that she went for that second plate of ravioli. We end up in the car, we end up at the hospital. The whole day was just nuts because once we get there, they confirm, yes, the water is broken, this baby is coming. And then within a matter of 8 or 9 hours, at roughly 1 o'clock in the morning on April 6th, my son was born. We did not know what the gender was going to be. So that was another really surreal moment. You hear the cry and you hear the doctor say it's a boy. And I mean, the emotions in that moment are just absolutely incredible. Spent some time in the hospital afterwards, got to spend some great bonding time in the last 3 weeks with my new son, with my fiance, with us, you know, not only kind of figuring out what to do with this new human who we're now in charge of keeping alive and keeping safe, but also just getting to spend some time with each other. It's honestly the first time I've taken that much time off of work since I can remember, probably since I was like in college. So it was a long time coming. I was, of course, watching a little bit from afar, keeping up with what was going on. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you I watched every minute of every game because I didn't. I had much bigger things to take care of. But yeah, I'm back now. I definitely, before I get into some Ranger stuff, I really do want to thank everybody so, so much for all of the well wishes, the kind words. I mean, there was an outpouring, you know, not just from our family and friends who are obviously kept apprised of what was going on the entire time, but even just, you know, I did a quick post on Twitter. And even before that, I had people from the Rangers and people from work life and people from, you know, that I've met through my job reaching out, which is really, really touching. And that's one of those things, like many of this stuff, it's hard to put into words how much it means. So thank you so much to everybody for your well wishes, for your understanding, for me stepping away for a while. I know some of you, kind of live and die for this content and love the day-to-day coverage, and I love providing it for you, but I really appreciate everyone understanding that in these moments, that stuff has to take a back seat, and you know, family's always going to come first for me, for sure. So now I'm back for the final 2 weeks of the season. I will be also be around in May, so I'm going to do a lot of wrap-up coverage for the season in May. Then I'm planning to take more time off in June, unless there's a Stanley Cup playoff run going on. Of course, I can change the schedule if that happens, but my tentative plan is to take more time off in June. But I'm going to be back for, you know, a solid month or so right now, see how this season finishes up, and then dive into some off-season content for sure. And then I'll be back again in July when we have free agency and the draft and all that fun stuff. And, you know, listen, in the time I was gone, the Rangers definitely kept things interesting. I missed 12 games while I was out on the beginning of my paternity leave. They went 8-3-1 in that span. I wrote in my column the other day that, to me, there's a lot of different contributors to how well they've been playing in the second half of the season. But to me, it comes down to this trio of Artemi Panarin, Mika Zibanejad, and Adam Fox. I mean, if you look around the league, I think you would be hard-pressed to find a trio that is as good as that, as those three have been this season when they're all on the ice and clicking together. Now, Panarin, we know that he is the most important player on the team. He's the driving force. He was a Hart Trophy finalist last year. You can make an argument that he should be that again based on the fact that he missed a chunk of time on that leave of absence and still is the team's leading scorer, is scoring at an incredible pace, is just always the most dangerous player on the ice when he's out there. Unless he's playing against someone like Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews, you can pretty safely say that Artemi Panarin is the most dangerous player on the ice. And it just goes to show what an impact he makes now that he's back, because everybody, you know, at the time wanted to talk about Chris Knobloch, what kind of impact was he having, and all this other stuff with the Rangers. But the true turning point to the season, this is indisputable to me, is if you look back to that March 13th game in Boston, the first game back for Panarin, they beat the crap out of Boston that day 4-0. It was one of their most complete games of the season. And since then, they've gone 16-6-3. And you cannot convince me otherwise that Artemi Panarin is not the main factor in that. But there's a lot more to it. Mika Zibanejad, around that same time, started catching fire. First 25 games of the season, he only had 9 points. Since then, he's been outrageous. He's back basically to close to a point per game this season, even though half the season he was in a real rut for. I've written about it. I've mentioned it to you guys several times. I'm fairly convinced that there was some lingering effect from COVID. I don't want to speculate as to, you know, a percentage or how much it affected him or whatnot. But I think if you talk to people around the Rangers, everybody feels like he wasn't quite himself for those first 25 games, and now he is. And you see what happens when he is, how dynamic the Rangers lineup becomes with him on one line, Panarin on another. Those two guys are both driving forces in their own right, and Zibanejad has been great lately. And then the third guy is Adam Fox. I mean, Norris Trophy buzz is really picking up. I mentioned this on the podcast, I think probably like 2 months ago, that I thought Victor Hedman was probably the front runner. But if you ask me to vote right now, I'm voting Adam Fox. He leads the NHL defensemen in points. His all-around impact is obvious every night. And I think if you encapsulate the whole Rangers season, if you consider that Artemi Panarin missed a chunk of time, that Mika had his early season struggles, to me, Adam Fox is the team MVP. He has been the most valuable player, the most consistent player for this team from start to finish. And he has really just catapulted himself to the upper echelon of NHL defensemen. And we'll see what happens with this Norris Trophy stuff. I'll be talking to people and writing about that for sure in the next few weeks. I got a lot of different stuff on my mind that I want to write about now that I'm back. But Adam Fox, just tremendous, tremendous season. So those three have been huge. They've carried the load, no doubt about it. I know that we can nitpick about certain stuff. I know a lot of you would like to see Vitali Kratsov higher up in the lineup. You know I've written about that. I've advocated for that. But there's no denying, when you look at the overall big picture right now with how things have gone during this 16-6-3 stretch that they're on, the ship is pointing in the right direction. I mean, the division we know is the toughest in the league, but the Rangers have held their own largely. I wrote about this before the game on Tuesday against the Sabres. They've done a really good job of taking care of business against the teams they should beat, which is the Sabres, who they went 6-1-1 against, and the Devils, who they went 6-2 against. But they also have at least 5 points against every other team in the division. They're 4-2 against the Capitals, who have been in first place for a large chunk of the season. They played really well against Washington. Pittsburgh's the one team that they've kind of struggled a little bit with. They went 2-4-2 against them. And then the Islanders and the Bruins, right now both the record against both of those teams is 2-3-1, but they've got two games left. So if they win those two games against either team, they finish with a winning record there. They have a winning record against the Flyers. So overall, if you look at this division and how difficult it is, the Rangers, inconsistency was an issue early in the season, no doubt about it. It still creeps up from time to time, even during this hot streak. But when they are on their game, when they are clicking, when the Panarins and the Zibanejads and the Foxes and all the other contributors in the lineup are on the same page, you can see the potential in this team. You can see that once they gain more experience, these young guys start to kind of learn how to play in the league more, get more of these meaningful games under their belt, which is crucially important for them right now. If they add a key piece here or there, this is going to be a team that can hang with the big boys very soon. We're not quite there yet, but it's pretty damn close, and they have a lot of quality wins in the second half of the season that are proving that right now. So if you're a Rangers fan, you have to be feeling good about where they're at right now. If you're not, I think you're probably a pessimistic person to begin with. The playoff race is what it is. They're in it. It's a long shot. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think they're going to make the playoffs. As we sit here on Wednesday, which is an off day for the team, they'll play again on Thursday against the Islanders. They are 4 points behind the Bruins, who also have two games in hand, which is an important disclaimer here. And they're 5 points behind the Islanders, who have one game in hand. Now, because the Islanders are in front of them and they're playing their next two games against the Islanders, if they were to win both those games, all of a sudden they're only 1 point back behind the Islanders and things look a lot different. Now, that's a tall order, no doubt about it. But in some ways, you can almost say that it might be easier for them to catch the Islanders right now than it is the Bruins, especially because the Islanders are not playing as well as the Bruins are playing right now. The Rangers have won 7 of their last 9, and so have the Bruins. So the Bruins are kind of doing what they need to do to maintain that gap between them and the Rangers, but the Islanders are slipping a little bit. So it's going to be really interesting to see how these next two games play out against the Islanders. We also know the Rangers will finish the season. They have 6 games left in total, with 2 against the Capitals after the Islanders, but they'll finish the season with 2 games against the Bruins. And, you know, listen, if it comes down to that situation where they're 2 or 3 points out of a playoff spot, you know, those games will mean something. Those games will be must-watch for Rangers fans, that's for sure. So, again, it's a long shot in a lot of ways, but there are 2 avenues. You know, there's the Islanders and there's the Bruins sitting in front of them, and they're both within striking distance. So that makes you feel a little bit more optimistic than if there was only one team or one avenue for them to pursue. Right now they have 2. We'll see how it plays out. The thing is, though, and I wrote about this in my column on Monday, which was my first main piece back after I got back from the paternity leave. Everybody all season has talked about the youth movement. That's been the theme of this team for a couple years now. I wrote at my midway point of the season story that I thought it was crucially important for them to prioritize development in the second half of the season. And that is fully on track. We talked about Kratzoff. Listen, you might say you want him to play higher up in the lineup, but Quinn has given him shifts in the top 9. He's moved him around when he's playing well. He's averaging over 11 minutes per game. I know a lot of you would like to see him play 15 minutes per game, but that's just not a realistic thing. That was never going to happen with him coming in at this stage of the season, especially when the team was playing well. But he's dipping his toe in the water. He's getting valuable experience, and he's proving that he deserves to have an expanded role, I should say, when you look at the team next season. But there's so many other guys to talk about. You know, Alexi Lafreniere in particular right now, he has really taken off. He scored the game-winning goal on Tuesday against Buffalo. He's got 4 points in his last 3 games. He's up to 10 goals this season. And you know, after the game on Tuesday, David Quinn made a point of saying, look, if this was a normal season and we were playing 82 games instead of 56, he would still have 30 games to go. And, you know, who knows what he could do if you gave him another 30 games, because we've seen the steady improvement from him. He's a fixture on that top line now with Mika Zibanejad and Pavel Buchnevich. So it would be feasible, if he were to continue playing for another 30 games, that he could probably approach 17, 18 goals and really finish on a high note. He's finishing on a high note anyway. You have to feel really good about him. I've said this before. If you compare his rookie season to Kaapo Kakko's, Lafreniere has been noticeably better. And that has to make you feel really good about, you know, where he's going to be at going into year two when he doesn't have a pandemic to deal with and he doesn't have to go 10 plus months without playing hockey and he'll have a normal preseason and training camp and all that. So Lafreniere is a huge positive for you right now. Kaapo Kakko, same thing. He's made great strides this season, especially when you look at his complete game. I know a lot of people would like to see him score more points. He did have two goals the other night, but generally speaking, yes, he does need to convert more of his opportunities into points. But look at the way that this guy just plays with more confidence in all three zones. He actually has the best expected goals against rate of any player, any forward, I should say, on the Rangers right now, which shows you how much his defense has improved this season. So he's another guy where the arrow is pointing up. And then you look at that decor. I mean, Jacob Trouba is out right now. Brendan Smith is kind of old man river in there holding it down. And then the rest of the decor is all 23 or younger. Zach Jones, I will tell you guys this. I did not see this coming with him signing the entry-level contract this season. I thought maybe outside possibility for next season, but realistically, I thought it was probably going to come after he completed his junior season at UMass. Them winning the national championship changed things. My understanding is that he indicated to the Rangers that he wanted to sign now, and I think the Rangers felt like even though they're burning a year of his entry-level contract just to basically get him a handful of games at the end of the year, that might not seem like the best business practice, but the Rangers felt like it was doing right by him. They wanted to show their commitment to him. They certainly did not want to risk letting him play out all 4 years at UMass and become a free agent and be able to sign with any team he wanted. So the safe bet for them was to get him in now, make him happy now, give him an opportunity. And listen, he's getting some games under his belt now. I do not think he's guaranteed a spot in the lineup next year because you got to look at all of the young defensemen they've signed. Matthew Robertson's entry-level contract, another left-handed defenseman, will begin next year. Braden Schneider's entry-level contract begins next year. And I wrote about him last week. I had actually been working on a story shortly before the baby came. I put it on hold, and then I finished it last week. But Nils Lundqvist is a guy who, I think if you talk to people around the Rangers, they feel like he is their most advanced defenseman prospect right now. I'm excluding, obviously, Fox and Lindgren and Miller. But of the guys who really haven't played much in the NHL, the Rangers feel like he's their most advanced, and they fully intend to sign him. I've heard that from a couple people now, including Chris Drury, and I know Jeff Gorton mentioned that at the trade deadline press conference. So Lundqvist will be in, Schneider, Robertson, Jones. They still have Tarmo around. They're going to have a lot of guys competing for those bottom pair roles. And then Chris Drury told me that the expectation is one or two of those guys will make the team and the rest will go to Hartford. And then they're going to have a chance to really have a good decor at Hartford next year and get those guys experience and really compile the depth. Now, the other thing that I obviously need to mention is that there's a very good chance that at some point, at least one of those young defensemen is traded. Could be this summer. Could be further down the line, but the Rangers have so many of these talented young defensemen that they're not going to be able to play them all. But you got to be thrilled with the fact that a guy like Jones is getting consistent playing time right now. You have to be thrilled with the fact that Keandre Miller is going to go into next season with basically a full NHL season under his belt, and everybody raves about how polished he's been and his demeanor and how advanced his maturity is. So he's going in as a locked-in top four defenseman for you next year. There's just so many guys that are making positive strides and will be better next year for the experience that they're getting right now. Another guy who absolutely is near the top of that list is Igor Shesterkin. And I actually wrote a column about Igor today because I mentioned that trio of Panarin, Zibanejad, and Fox. But to me, if you're listing the most important Rangers during this stretch, right after that threesome, Igor is right in there, probably number four. Some people were questioning whether or not he could handle a true number one goalie's workload. Not because of his play, but because of the fact that last year he dealt with some injury issues. In the bubble, he didn't play in the first two games because of a groin injury. Groin injury comes up again this season. He ends up missing a handful of games in the middle of the season. We know the Rangers had goalie issues with it when he was out, especially with Alex Georgiev. But he came back on March, I think it was 23rd, and now he's played 15 of the last 19 games. That is definitely the most playing time the Rangers have given him in any stretch since he's been in New York. And he's handled it incredibly well. He's been a huge part of this improved play that they've been showing in recent weeks. And as I wrote today, if it were my call, as long as they have a shot at the playoffs in these next six games, now if it comes to a point where they're eliminated, obviously you could change course. Or, I should make this clear too, if Igor is feeling fatigue and needs a day off, then you got to do that. But if he feels good, which he says he does, and he talked last night about the confidence that he has right now because of how much he's been playing, to me, I'm playing him in each of these last six games. I know Georgiev has a great history against the Islanders, but Igor was the best player on the ice in that Tuesday game against the Sabres. I don't see how you don't play him on Thursday. And if he plays well on Thursday and you beat the Islanders, I don't see how you don't play him again on Saturday. And then at that point, I think you got to ride him all the way through because he gives you the best chance to win. Quinn talks a lot about being accountable to the rest of the locker room. And if you're looking around at all the players in that locker room who are working very hard right now to try to make this playoff dream happen, I don't see how you look them in the eye and say, I'm not going to play the goalie who gives us the best chance to win. So to me, I think Igor should start these last six games. We'll see if he does. My guess, my hunch for sure, is that you will see him play on Thursday. No matter how all this turns out, this second half, though, has been so productive in terms of the rebuild and taking the next step in the rebuild. We talked about the importance of playing meaningful games on the stretch and what that does for the development of the young players. But the other thing that really is kind of standing out to me when you hear them talk right now is how close this group seems to be getting together. Brendan Smith did a really good job on Tuesday night of kind of encapsulating it and putting it into words, but there's a real tightness about this group. There's a lot of young guys that come from different places, from Europe, from Russia, from Canada, from the U.S. And I think what we're seeing over the course of the season is not only are they buying into the system more, learning to play together more, but they're becoming close. And this is going to be the core group that the Rangers are going to move forward with. So that is, you know, it's hard to overstate how important that is in terms of the development. Not just the ice time, which I know gets a lot of attention, not just the playing in meaningful games, which is a big, big part of it, but also the time these guys are having together, the locker room experiences, just everything that goes into the fact that they are playing in these important games right now. They're all kind of pulling the rope in the same direction, and that's just something that they're going to build on moving forward, because while I do expect them, as we've talked about several times, to try to make an impact addition this offseason, the team's going to look a lot like it does right now, and going through what they're going through right now is just a great sign for the future, if you ask me. Now, the pressure gets ramped up next year. We've talked about that at length before as well. And the Rangers are well positioned to make a move. The cap space and all that, I'm going to dive into all that stuff, obviously, in the offseason. But I'm going to say this one time before we kind of move on from this topic, which has been a topic a lot this season for the Quinn haters. I would cool down for a little while. I wrote around the middle of the season, when the Rangers were really struggling with consistency, that, you know, they needed to show positive signs in the second half to really solidify the fact that they're moving in the right direction under Quinn. They've done that, all right? You could argue all you want about the line combinations and this and that, but 16-6-3 speaks for itself. I'll tell you right now, before you even ask, he's coming back next season. The way the team is moving, the direction they're going, management is happy with it. It's hard to fault them for that, given the way that they've been winning lately. And he's coming back next season. So let's move on from that topic for a little while. Again, everyone should feel really good about where this team is at. Enjoy the next six games and look forward to the future because it looks bright. There's going to be points where we're going to be critical. There's going to be points where you're going to be disappointed. But right now, my message coming off of this three-week stretch where I wasn't around is that things are looking up. You got to feel really good about where this team is at right now. With that, I'm going to take a quick break. And then we'll be back and we're going to answer your Twitter questions for the first time in a while. And we're back. Just went and checked on little V. He is passed out, super sleepy. He loves to sleep. I can tell you guys that I have never met anybody who enjoys sleeping as much as he does, which is a good thing. Although the sleeps comes in like spurts of 3-4 hours, so you don't really get a full night's sleep. You usually got to wake up around 3-4 o'clock in the morning to feed him, but I expected it comes with the territory. And right now he is passed out, having a good day for sure. It's like 80 something degrees out. We might try to take him out a little bit, although he's not a huge fan of the sun so far. So his favorite thing is just eating and then going right to sleep. least favorite thing is a bath. That we're still working on, but we'll get there, I hope. All right. We're going to get to your Twitter questions now. A lot of topics to dive into. And actually, interestingly, the most popular topic this week seemed to be about the Seattle expansion draft. So I'm just going to kind of group those in together and touch on that a little bit. I will note that I wrote about this prior to this season, so during the offseason, and kind of went through the decisions that I thought the Rangers would have to make and the guys that would probably be involved in the conversation. It's something I'm definitely going to address again after the season ends and do a little more digging to see if maybe the Rangers' line of thinking has changed from the last time I checked in on this stuff. But where it's at right now, my best understanding the last time I was talking to people about this is that I think they pretty much have their minds made up about who they're going to protect. Six of the seven forwards are pretty much set. There are three guys that have no move clauses, Kreider, Panarin, Zibanejad, so those guys obviously aren't going anywhere. Pavel Buchnevich, Philip Hedl, and Ryan Strom at this point, you have to feel like are locks. Strom was a little bit of a question mark. You know, you thought maybe the Rangers might think about letting him go if there was other guys that they really wanted to protect. But Strom has just been so valuable. He's a guy I didn't even mention in that first segment in terms of key players, but he's definitely in the top 10. He's averaging nearly a point per game. He even played well when Panarin was out to kind of dispel that theory that he was only having to break out with the Rangers because he was playing with Panarin. He's been a really solid top six guy for them, and I don't see any way that they would want to let him walk away for nothing. Would they consider a trade? Perhaps. But until they lock in another center that they feel like is an upgrade, you have to feel like they want to keep Strom around. And there's even a chance they want to keep Strom around beyond that anyway, because he has just proven over the last 2 years to be a really valuable guy for them. And I know, you know, he's taken his knocks with fans, and they've talked about the unsustainable shooting percentage, and they've talked about only having success because he plays with Panarin and all this stuff. But he's been steady, man. It's really hard to criticize him. He's had another really good year. So Strom, I think, is a safe bet for them to protect. And then that final spot really comes down to three guys. Are you going to protect Brett Howden? Are you going to protect Julien Gauthier? Or are you going to protect, and I can't believe we're saying this, but this is definitely something the Rangers are going to consider, Colin Blackwell? The Blackwell thing seems to have been picking up steam. I've heard people say, oh, you know, we think they're definitely going to protect him now. I don't think so, to be honest with you guys. I wouldn't rule it out for sure. He's definitely proven his value, and we know he's played a lot on that second line. And moving forward, I'm sure he's a guy the Rangers would feel pretty good about playing on their fourth line. He has definitely proven that he's an NHL caliber forward. But I just think that the Rangers signed him to that 2-year deal initially with the mindset that he would be a guy who would provide depth, and if he got taken in the expansion draft, so be it. I don't think he's a guy that they're going to go out of their way to try to protect at this time. Again, I could be wrong, but to me, I kind of see Blackwell being left out there for Seattle if they so choose. The other guy who I think I really have a hard time envisioning them keeping right now is Julien Gauthier. He has been basically a healthy scratch for like half the season. The Rangers clearly do not trust him fully enough to play him consistently. That's been pretty obvious. In the beginning of the season, he was in the lineup, came out pretty quickly. Now that they've added guys like Kratsov, they clearly feel is a better overall player. I think it's hard to argue with that. So he's just kind of been pushed down in that pecking order of right wingers. Blackwell has surpassed him in the depth chart. So the Rangers, for a variety of reasons, just feel like he is not a complete enough player for them to want to play every night. I know everybody focuses and gets fascinated with the size and the speed that he brings, which is unique. There's no doubt about that. But he's just not what the Rangers view as a very well-rounded player. I could nitpick that a little bit. I've said many times that I would like to see him get more of an opportunity, but I also cannot sit here and tell you that I feel like he has done anything to really lock himself into a role. And if you look at the depth the Rangers have, you know, Gauthier, I think, is a guy that probably needs a top nine role to really succeed. And you tell me which winger moving forward that the Rangers have that he deserves to play over or would have a chance at playing over in the future, next year, beyond, whatever. I mean, Kratsov, Lafreniere, Kako, Kreider, Panarin, Buchnevich. he's not playing over any of those guys. And those are your six wingers for the top nine next season. So Gauthier, I think, is a guy that they definitely view as expendable. And I would be pretty surprised at this point if they protected him. And that leads me to, I'm sure a lot of you aren't going to want to hear this, but that leads me to Brett Howden. And I'll tell you this. I was told before the season that it was very unlikely the Rangers would not protect him. And even though I do not think he's had a good season, we know he contributes basically nothing offensively, the Rangers value him as a penalty killer, as a fourth line guy, as a good locker room guy, as a guy who they value in terms of his character and his work ethic and all that kind of stuff. And we also know that the Rangers' position where they lack the most depth as far as forwards is center. They have a lot of wingers. They're not as deep at center. Howden is not a great center by any stretch, but I think that they would rather hold on to a young center than hold on to a winger if you're looking at it from a positional standpoint. So there's a variety of factors, but the Rangers like Howden, I would say more than most of Twitter does, and I'm bracing you guys for the reality. I'm fairly convinced at this point, and again, I'm going to check on this, so don't go writing this in stone yet, but I'm fairly convinced that that final spot to protect a forward will end up being Brett Howden. So don't be surprised if that happens, because I'm pretty sure that that's the direction it's heading. And again, leading into the season, I was told that that was the likelihood. So I'll leave it on that. You know, we'll readdress that in future episodes and in future stories and all that. And the defenseman, we can touch on that really quickly, but that's pretty obvious. Trouba has a no-move clause, so Trouba's not going anywhere. They're going to have to protect him. The other spot that they're going to use to protect is going to be Ryan Lindgren. There's no doubt about that. And then now that we know Tony DeAngelo isn't staying, they're going to obviously expose him, and they really don't have anybody else that they feel strongly about needing to protect. So Lieber Hayek kind of gets the third spot by default. The defensemen that are going to get protected are almost certainly going to be Trouba, Lindgren, and then Hayek as kind of, like I said, a default, because they just really don't have anybody else that they need to worry about losing. All right, let's get on to the next question, which comes from John Papa D, who wrote, "Hey Vince, congrats on the baby." Thank you, John. "I just had twins in March. Miss sleep yet, LOL." If you're asking me if I miss sleep yet, a little bit. But, you know, again, like I said earlier, he's been pretty good. I mean, only having to wake up once in the middle of the night, which is probably the average, I'll take that for sure compared to some of the horror stories I've heard from other parents. John goes on to write, "Just curious what you thought of Gort's press conference after the trade deadline and if you felt like the Rangers, for lack of a better experience, punted this season, considering the cap and the division they were in." I definitely do not think they punted the season. I think that they made a wise, strategic decision and really honestly assessed where they're at. Gorton, if you listen to that press conference, talked a lot about people that were available were rentals. And I don't think anybody would sit here and tell you that they think that the Rangers were in a position where they should have been considering rentals just to try to, you know, make them slightly better this season. And if you look at their roster, they're so deep with all these young players. I mean, if you go and bring in a veteran rental, that's going to cost a guy like Kratzoff or a guy like Zach Jones or a guy like even Lieber Hayek. Those are going to cost young players ice time. So from my perspective, the Rangers knew, I mean, they were optimistic, hoping that they would be able to make some kind of a playoff push. I think they knew deep down it was somewhat of a long shot. But of course, they wanted to give themselves a chance to stay in the race. But at the same time, why go out and sell off assets for a short-term rental when you know that truly you're a year or two away from really being a contending team? On the other hand, I don't think they were in position to be sellers either, because they didn't really have that expiring contract that jumped out at you as somebody that other teams would covet and maybe give up, you know, a high draft pick or a good prospect or something like that for. Last year was Kreider. The Rangers had that valuable piece and they decided to hold on to him. We've seen in other years when they've sold off, including last year when they traded Brady Shea. But this year they really didn't have an upcoming UFA who felt like a guy that they needed to move. I had heard some whispers about Brendan Smith being a guy that they were taking calls on, but I don't think that they were getting offered anything substantial for Brendan Smith. And we've seen how valuable he is for this team in this playoff push. He's become a fixture on the decor after starting the season as a healthy scratch. So I think that there's a lot of value in holding on to him, especially when, what, if you traded him, you were going to get like a fifth or sixth round pick. To me, that probably wasn't worth it. And then the RFAs they have, you know, the two names that were floated a lot before the season were Buchnevich and Strome. And those guys have been so valuable for the team that had you traded them, you would have, number one, really hurt the chances for the team this year. And number two, moving forward, I think especially Buchnevich is a guy that the Rangers want to keep around. I fully expect them to make a push to try to re-sign him this offseason. That could change if some big trade package comes along and he ends up being a central part of that. But I do not think that he is a guy that they were ready to part with by any stretch of the imagination. He's only a restricted free agent, so they maintain some control going into the summer. So there really just, there wasn't a trade that made sense. So I had been hearing from several sources weeks before the deadline that the Rangers were probably going to be quiet. Lo and behold, they were. The one move they made a couple weeks before the deadline was trading Brendan Lemieux. They collected a draft pick for that. They were able to kind of break up a little bit of that excess of wingers that they had in the bottom six, which I think was probably a move that made sense for them to make, whether it was Lemieux or another one of those bottom six wingers. But overall, I was not surprised at all. And I definitely don't think that punted is the fair way to put it. If they were punting, then maybe they would have tried to sell off a Buchnevich or a Smith or someone like that. But they held tight with what they have. They see value in those type of guys, especially, like I said, Buchnevich is a guy, and Strome, even given the season he's had, are guys that they'd like to keep around. And at the same time, I think it was the prudent move, it was the wise move to not give up assets just for a minor short-term gain, especially when that player that you would have brought in, if you bring in a veteran, probably would have taken time away from a young player. So I think the Rangers did what they needed to do. And this summer, listen, circle your calendars for the summer. That's when the options open up, the cap room opens up, and they'll be in more of a position to strike and use their assets for something that they really want. And something that they really want is somebody who they envision as being a long-term piece, not a short-term rental. So that's my take on the trade deadline. It was what I expected, and I think that it was probably the right way to play it. All right, our final question comes from Maxwell Vogliano, who asked, with the playoff push in full swing for seemingly the rest of the season, any chance we see Tarmo or Barron? Also, if Trouba can make it back for this last push, do you see Hayek or Jones coming out? Two pretty good questions, Maxwell. I asked David Quinn the first one, actually, on Tuesday. I asked him, you know, the Rangers have recalls to use. They have four spots they can use to recall prospects from Hartford. And I asked if they plan on using it. He didn't really answer the question. He basically said that it's an ongoing conversation and it could change any day based on injuries or based on, you know, somebody's play dropping off, that sort of a thing. But I did talk to somebody from the Rangers and it was pretty obvious even based on Quinn's answer. But they right now, because they are playing to win every game, because they are still technically in it, because they have gone on this run and kept things interesting, they're not looking to make any lineup changes right now. You know, you could argue, I definitely think that you could make a case that, you know, you'd rather see Barron in there on the fourth line over a guy like Howden or Rooney, especially to reward Barron for the good season that he had with Hartford. But I think that the Rangers are going to hold off at least a couple more games on that because they want to see if they can keep this run going. You know, this Islanders series, these two games against the Islanders, I think will determine a lot as far as that. But if they keep winning, they're not going to change the lineup. They're going to keep trying to go for this playoff push. So right now, I would tell you that I do not see those guys being called up in the next day or two. But check back next week because this is a very fluid situation. I believe that was the word that Quinn used. And it could change in a moment's notice. But right now, they're going to stick with what they have. And, you know, they even do have a guy like we just talked about, Gauthier, who's still sitting there as a healthy scratch. So it's not like they really need somebody right now, given the lineup and the way that they've been performing and all that. And so right now, I kind of don't think you're going to see either one of those guys, at least not in the next game or two. The second part of the question about Trouba, that's an interesting question. A lot of people are speculating. It definitely looked like a concussion, but you never want to say that for sure unless the team confirms it. But, you know, the Rangers are saying upper body injury. We don't know how much time he's going to miss. We know he's been skating, but he hasn't practiced with the team. So I don't know how much time he's going to miss. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I do. If he comes back, obviously he's going into the lineup. There's no doubt about that. And it's a good question whether it's Hayek or Jones coming out. Hayek had a couple healthy scratches recently before Trouba's injury, with Quinn saying that he thought his play dropped off. And, you know, to me, Jones is definitely the bigger upside guy. Jones is definitely the more exciting prospect. So maybe Jones would stay in there. I think he's looked okay in his time. He looks pretty composed with the puck. You can see the skill that he has with the puck. I even think he's made a couple noticeable defensive plays. I still think he doesn't fully have the Rangers' trust in the defensive zone. They're not going to throw him out there, or they're going to try to avoid throwing him out there as much as they can against the top lines for other teams. His minutes have been fairly limited. He's playing, you know, roughly 10 minutes a night, something like that so far. But if Trouba comes back, then I think you could envision a scenario where your top four is what it was all season, with Lindgren and Fox and then Miller and Trouba as the top two pairings. And then you drop Brendan Smith down to the bottom pair, and you could play him with Jones and feel like at least they're going to compete. At least he has a veteran with him who will kind of help him in a variety of different ways, as we've seen Smith do with other players. So to me, I think Hayek might be the guy who comes out, but it probably depends on like the most recent game and which one of those two guys Quinn thought played better, whichever the previous game was. All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode. A little bit shorter than usual, but I'm juggling a lot of stuff right now, trying to get my bearings now that I'm back at work. Got a lot of stories coming your way in the next few days. We got these final six games to go, so I'm really excited to kind of cover this, get back into the swing of things, see how things go. I had another column go up today, that story that I mentioned earlier about Igor Shesterkin, which you guys can check out at loha.com/sports/Rangers. For those of you who aren't subscribers to loha.com or northjersey.com or anywhere that my stories appear, we have that offer going again right now. That's $1 for the first 6 months. So if you need those links or you have any questions about that, definitely reach out to me. I'll be back next week with a guest, so we'll get kind of back into the normal flow of the show. But I hope you guys enjoyed this one. Again, I'm thrilled to be back. Really happy to be able to kind of share some of these experiences with you guys. Maybe one of these episodes, I'll let little V come on here and give you guys a fart or a cry or something. Hopefully make you laugh a little bit. But for now, I'm going to go. I think it's time for me to eat, and I will talk to you guys next time.